Welcome to the Hackberry House of Chosun. My name is Bob. I'm reading today from the words of John Newton, his autobiography. It's been updated a little bit by Dennis Hillman, but it is John Newton's autobiography. He's the author of Amazing Grace, I think you recall. We've read chapter one. Let's read chapter two right now. And don't forget that this book is available from Kriegel Publications. This was published in 2003 by them. How pleasing it is to repeat the confession of David. O Lord, I am thy servant, the son of thine handmaid. Thou hast loosed my bonds. God's tender mercies on my behalf were clearly seen in the first moments of my life. It was as if I was born in his house and dedicated to him in my infancy. Many people have told me that my mother was a devout and mature Christian, a member of the dissenting church. She was not physically strong and had a reserved personality. I was her only child, and almost all of her attention was given to my education. I have some faint recollections of her care and instructions. When I was about 3 years of age, she herself taught me to read. When I was 4 years old, I could read any common book with understanding. She helped me store in my memory, which was then very retentive, many valuable verses, portions, and chapters of Scripture, as well as catechisms, hymns, and poems. During my early years, I had little interest in the noisy sports of children. I was most happy in my mother's company and was always as willing to learn as she was to teach. Even the best education may fall short of affecting the heart, as my own story will demonstrate. But I think my example should be an encouragement for godly parents to continue doing their part faithfully. Although in later years I sinned away all the advantages of my early learning, they did restrain my behavior for some time. They returned in my mind again and again, and it was a very long time before I could wholly shake them off. When the Lord finally opened my eyes, I found that my recollection of them was a great benefit. My dear mother, besides the care she took with me, often commended me to God with many prayers and tears. My mother noted my early progress with great satisfaction and planned from my earliest years to prepare me for the ministry, if the Lord should so incline my heart. In my sixth year, I began to learn Latin, but before I had time to learn much of the language, the intended plan of my education was interrupted. I was deprived of my mother when I was not quite 7 years old. I was born July 24, 1725, and she died July 11, 1732, 7 years. The Lord's designs were far beyond the plans of an earthly parent. He chose to use me as an unusual proof of his patience, providence, and grace. My father was at sea. He was a commander in the Mediterranean trade at that time. He came home the following year and soon after married again. I was then given into the care of others. I was well treated, but there was no remedy for the loss of my mother's instruction. I was now permitted to mingle with negligent and irreligious children, and I soon began to imitate their conduct. Soon after my father's marriage, I was sent to a boarding school in Essex. The schoolmaster's ill-advised harshness almost broke my spirit and my enthusiasm for books. While there, I forgot the first principles and rules of arithmetic, which my mother had taught me years before. I stayed for 2 years, but in the second year, a new teacher came, who observed and took into account my temperament. I took to Latin with great eagerness, and before I was 10 years old, I could read Latin authors such as Virgil. I believe I was pushed forward too fast, however. Not being grounded, I soon lost all I had learned, and I left school in my 10th year. Years later, when I studied Latin from books, I think I had little, if any, advantage from my early learning. When I was 11 years old, my father took me to sea with him. A man of great practical sense and experience in the world, he was careful to protect my morals, but he could not make up for my mother's absence. Having been educated in Spain, he always maintained a sense of distance and sternness in his manner that intimidated and discouraged me. I was always in fear of him, and therefore he had less of an influence upon my life. From 1736 to 1742, I made several voyages, spending considerable intervals between voyages in the country. Shortly after my 15th birthday, I was given a very promising position at Alicante, Spain. But my undisciplined behavior and rebelliousness ruined the opportunity. During this period, my disposition and conduct were exceedingly unstable. I had little concern for religion and was easily angered. However, I was often disturbed by my conscience. I had enjoyed reading since my childhood. Among other books, I found Benet's Christian Oratory. Although I only understood a little of it, the course of life that it recommended appeared very desirable. I decided to attempt it. I began to pray, to read the scriptures, to keep a diary. Soon I felt that I was religious. This seeming goodness, however, had no solid foundation and soon passed away like a morning cloud or the early dew. I was soon tired of the effort, gradually gave it up, and finally became worse than before. Instead of prayer, I learned to curse and blaspheme and was very sinful when not under my parents' supervision. Before I was 12 years old, I had a dangerous fall from a horse. I was thrown, unhurt, within a few inches of a newly trimmed hedgerow. I could not avoid recognizing God's gracious providence in my deliverance. Had I fallen upon the stakes, I likely would have been killed. My conscience reminded me of the dreadful consequences had I been summoned to appear before God in my godless condition. I subsequently broke off my sinful practices and appeared quite altered, but it was not long before I succumbed to them again. This struggle between sin and conscience was repeated often, and every relapse sank me into still greater depths of wickedness. Once I was moved by the death of a close companion. We had agreed to go on board a warship. I think it was on a Sunday, but I providentially arrived too late. The boat overturned, and my friend and several others drowned. At my friend's funeral, I was overwhelmed by the thought that, due to a delay of just a few minutes, which had angered me, my life had been preserved. However, this also was soon forgotten. Another time, my reading of the Family Instructor started me on a partial and brief reformation. Although I cannot distinctly recall the specifics, I think I took up and laid aside a religious profession three or four different times before I was 16 years old. And during all of this time, my heart was insincere. I understood the necessity of religion as a means of escaping hell, but I loved sin and was unwilling to forsake it. And there were frequent instances of this stubbornness, and I was strangely blind and stupid. Sometimes, when I determined to do things that I knew were sinful and contrary to my moral duty, I could not continue untroubled until I first performed my routine of prayer. I begrudged every moment of such time. But when it was finished, my conscience was in some measure pacified, and I could rush into foolishness with little remorse. My last effort at reform was the most remarkable in its thoroughness and continuance. I might describe this period with the Apostle Paul's words, quote, "After the straitest sect of our religion, I lived a Pharisee," Philippians 3:5. I did everything that might be expected from a person entirely ignorant of God's righteousness, who works to build his own self-righteousness. I spent the majority of every day in the reading of Scripture, in meditation, and in prayer. I fasted often. I even abstained from all meat for 3 months. I would hardly answer a question for fear of speaking a wrong word. I seemed to regret my former misconduct very earnestly, sometimes with tears. I became an ascetic, and attempted, so far as my position would permit, to give up all social contact so that I might avoid temptation. I continued in this serious mood, I cannot give it a higher title than serious mood, for more than 2 years without any relaxing of my efforts. It was a poor religion that left me in many respects under the power of sin. It tended to make me depressed, apathetic, unsociable, and useless. Such was my frame of mind when I became acquainted with Lord Shaftesbury's characteristics. The title attracted me, and I enjoyed the writing, especially the second piece entitled A Rhapsody. Nothing could be more suited to my romantic mind than this pompous discourse. I thought that the author was a most religious person and that I had only to follow him and be happy. And thus, with fine words and fair speeches, my simple heart was beguiled. This book was always in my hand, and I read it until I could very nearly repeat the rhapsody verbatim from beginning to end. No immediate effect followed, but it operated like a slow poison and prepared the way for all that came after. In December 1742, I returned from a voyage, and my father, thinking of not sending me to sea again, considered how to settle me in the world. Now, I had little enthusiasm for business, and I knew very little of the world. I was fond of a visionary contemplative life, a medley of religion, philosophy, and laziness. I was quite averse to the thought of an industrious application to business. And finally, a merchant in Liverpool, a close friend of my father's, to whom, as the instrument of God's goodness, I owe for all my earthly comforts, he proposed to send me for some years to Jamaica, and to take upon himself the responsibility for my future. I agreed to this, and was on the point of setting out the following week. In the meantime, my father sent me on some business a few miles beyond Maidstone in Kent. This short journey, which was to have been only for 3 or 4 days, occasioned a sudden and remarkable change, which roused me from my indolence. Quote, "The way of man is not in himself. It is not in man that walketh to direct his steps." Jeremiah 10:23. And some end notes to this chapter. Christians who refuse to participate in the state church or Church of England, those are the dissenters. The term was originally applied to both Roman Catholics and Puritans who refused to give their allegiance to the Church of England under Elizabeth I. And later, it just came to apply to numerous Protestant groups. So he was raised in that tradition. Newton's mother died of tuberculosis after being cared for at the home of her longtime friend, Elizabeth Catlett. Spread easily in the crowded housing of London and without medical cure, tuberculosis was routinely fatal. The works of Anthony Cooper, the third Earl of Shaftesbury, is what he was talking about in this work that he read. Cooper's writings, not Cowper, but Cooper's writings, published in 3 volumes in 1711, reflected his education under philosopher John Locke. It stressed a natural inclination to virtue, or an innate moral sense in every person. Thus, a person's natural virtue would override selfish inclinations. Cooper followed the Church of England, but in his writings he held that atheism was an acceptable belief. Cooper himself was a deist who rejected the Bible as a divine revelation and discounted miracles as a subversion of the natural order. So you see what he's raising himself on now as the story progresses. Doesn't get a whole lot better. In fact, it doesn't get better at all. It's going to get a lot worse. Stay with us, though, because you'll see the end of the story as you know it to be wonderful. Well, thank you for listening. Please look around the site. We have over 3,000 audios featuring some of the church's great preachers, persecution stories from North Korea in English and Korean, Bible studies on a number of subjects, a blog, and a store where you can purchase one of my books. If you desire more fellowship, please consider visiting my YouTube channel. It's known as Pasture Lands, or contact me at bob.j.faulkner.72@gmail.com, and I will share details of our street ministry locally, our Saturday evening Zoom meeting for men, our Tuesday noon meeting for men and women, and other things. This is the Hackberry House of Chosun. It is, as you are hearing it for the first time, May the 4th, 2022. Lord willing, we'll talk again real soon. Bye-bye.